Best-selling author and financial author and host of Be Smart, How Not to Be an Idiot with Your Money podcast. Oh, there's a title. Is Jared Dillian joining us on the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Hi, Jared. Welcome back.
John, thanks for having me back. Great to be here.
I don't know anything about podcasts, but I think the titles are supposed to be short. Be Smart, How Not to Be an Idiot with Your Money. I guess I get it, but have you thought about shoring the title of your podcast up a little bit?
Well, I mean, it really is just be smart. I mean, the tagline is how not to be an idiot with your money, but it's just, it's be smart. That's what it is. Yeah.
Well, speaking of that, so give me some tips on saving for retirement that aren't too complicated. What have you got for me today?
Well, I mean, the thing with saving for retirement is that you have to, the first thing is that you have to start early. You have to start at a very young age. I actually have a nephew who's working for a bank in New York. And, you know, he has some competition for his cash. He has to build up an emergency fund and he has to pay down student loans. But I said to him, I'm like, look, it's important that you start saving for retirement. So he has a 401k and he's contributing about $6,000 a year. And I said, look, the contribution limits are $19,500. You should try to get as close as you can to maxing that out. You know, me personally, you know, when I worked in the private sector, I had a 401k and I maxed it out every single year. I still have it. I have substantial retirement savings. So the first thing to do is to start early, and the second thing to do is to max it out if you can.
If you can. I'm sure he's going to say, hey, uncle, that's a good idea. I don't have $19,000 to put in that account.
No, that is what he says. I mean, he's living in an apartment in New York City. His costs are very high. You know, for most people who don't live in New York City or San Francisco or L.A., you know, they live somewhere else in the country. If you're making $100,000 a year, it's very possible for you to save 20% of your income. That's what you should do. And you take it off the top line. You contribute pre-tax. So you're basically getting, you know, a $5,000 tax benefit, which is free money. So it's really a great thing to do.
Is there, you mentioned 20%. The average American, by the way, makes less than $50,000 a year. So is there a percent we can throw out there that says you should be saving this percent of your income?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you start early, if you start right out of college or high school, then you can get away with saving 10 to 20% of your income. If you start in your 40s, then you have to increase the percentage to about 30 or 40%. If you start after that, you really have to buckle down and save a lot of money in order to have a comfortable retirement. And I know that's possible. You know, my own mother actually waited until about age 45 to start saving for a retirement. And she saved about 50% of her income in the last 20 years of her career. And she's retired very comfortably.
That's not a recommendation, though, is it?
No, I mean, ideally people would start much, much earlier. So you don't have to go through all that kind of austerity later in life in order to do that.
Well, isn't there some rule of 72 or something and how your money multiplies over the years? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do know what you're talking about. I don't remember the math behind it offhand, but basically it talks about how many years it takes for your money to double, assuming a certain compounding rate. So just, you know, making this up off the top of my head, you know, if you're compounding at 8% a year, you can double your money in 10 years or something like that. I don't remember the exact rule.
You wrote about a slacker's plan. Have we already talked about that? What's the slacker's plan?
Actually, you'll have to prompt me on that. What's the slacker's plan?
I'll read it to you. It says, at the very least, you want to make the maximum contribution to an IRA every year. Evidently, this isn't your plan, but I'll read you somebody's slacker's plan. For everyone under the age of 50, the limit is $6,000 a year. You can do that. Think about it. $6,000 a year is $500 a month or about $17 a day. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, people don't really talk about IRAs that much anymore, you know, because the contribution limits are pretty low. They're only $6,000. And people say, well, what difference is that going to make, saving $6,000? Well, first of all, if you open a traditional IRA and you contribute $6,000, that's pre-tax. So you're getting that money back in taxes. But let's say you contributed to this IRA over the course of 40 years, that's $240,000. That's $6,000 times 40 years is $240,000. If you factor in even conservative investment gains, that's $600,000 to $800,000 by the time you retire at age 65. That's a comfortable retirement. And like you said, it's only $500 a month, which is $17 a day, which is basically the cost of going out to lunch.
Jared Dillian's on a phone line, the best-selling financial author. JaredDillianMoney.com is his website. I'll spell that for you in a little bit. We'll pause here and ask you. I also wanted to ask you a little bit about the national debt. And should that be something I should think about at all? And maybe as we are still in January, it's a good time just to talk about planning your finances. We're talking a little bit about maybe calculations to make or things to think about as you save for retirement. Now, what else should we be thinking about these days, Jared?
Well, you know, saving for retirement, you have to put aside the cash every month. And it's a lot easier to do that if you do it automatically, if you don't leave any discretion up to it. And one of the reasons that's important is, you know, 50% of 401k assets go into what's called target date funds. And what a target date fund does is you start out with an asset allocation that's mostly stocks and a little bit of bonds. And then as you get older, the asset allocation shifts and you get more and more bonds in your portfolio. So you don't have to go through this brain damage of, you know, figuring out an asset allocation. It's done for you. So a lot of people contribute to these target date funds, and it's very important to dollar cost average, which means you contribute when the markets are going up, you contribute when the markets are going down, you're always contributing, it gets taken out of every paycheck, and there's no discretion involved at all. And when there's discretion involved, it's usually when people make mistakes, they buy on the highs or sell on the lows, and their returns go down.
What's your thought about paying off debt versus investing in the markets?
So I think you have to pay off pretty much all of your debt before you start investing. And what I mean by that is you should not carry a credit card balance. You should not have a car loan. It's acceptable to have a mortgage. A mortgage is pretty safe debt. It's secured debt, so it's pretty safe. I would never tell anybody that they have to pay off their mortgage before they start investing because it's important to start investing. But in terms of the smaller stuff, the credit card debt, the car loans, and also the student loans, you should probably try to pay that off before you start thinking about investing. And, you know, the number one question I get is I hear from people who are super excited about investing because investing is fun and they want to make money and it's exciting. But I say my first question is, what debt do you have? And you should pay it off first.
Boy, oh boy. Average new car is $27,000. Average new car is $42,000. Student loans are not infrequently six figures. A lot of people stretch those out 20 years. You don't want me to start saving? You want me to pay those things off first? I'm not going to be putting money in the bank for a long time if I do that.
No, I really believe that. You know, I mean, the thing is that I hear from a lot of people, they say, look, like I can take out a mortgage at 3%. You know, why would I pay off the mortgage? Because I can borrow at 3% and I can invest in the stock market and make 10%, except, you know, the stock market, it's not a CD. It doesn't make 10% every year. Sometimes it goes down, sometimes it goes up. And if it goes down, then you have debt and losses. The other thing about credit card debt and student loan debt, it's higher interest. So you're actually borrowing at, you know, in the case of credit cards, you're borrowing at 19%. Or in the case of student loans, you could be borrowing at 8%.
Yeah.
So it's a much higher hurdle to beat that.
I understand that. But boy, oh boy, forget about cars for a minute. Because you can buy a used car for $15,000. You still got to save $15,000, according to you. But the student loans are onerous. I don't think people are going to pay off their student loan before they start to invest, even though they'll be upside down. You might not be getting 7% on whatever you're putting the money in. You have been lately, though. The last few years have been pretty good. But
well, the average student loan balance is $30,000. That's the average. And I think that's a median, actually. So, I mean, yes, there's tons of instances where people have six figures in student loans. But, you know, if you go to a reasonably priced school, you should be able to pay off the debt within 5 years. I mean, that's the goal.
Well, I'm just getting my head around that, too. I'm thinking, actually, I did. But I went to Southern Illinois University at Carbondale for 2 years, and it didn't cost that much. College, I think that colleges, here's a line that I threw out earlier. In fact, we're going to talk about the value of a college education versus the cost of tuition after 1 o'clock. So maybe you should comment on this, Jared. I described what universities do these days as educational malpractice. They charge so much, and they know full well that kids are borrowing insane amount of monies to go to some of these great schools, and they know that those kids are saddled with that debt for years. What's your thought about that?
No, I don't disagree with you. In fact, I agree with you. And, you know, higher education is in sort of a bubble. It has been for a few years. What's happening is that, you know, the government basically nationalized student lending. So if you get a loan for college, it's coming from the government. And the government will lend any amount of money. I mean, just this is a stupid example, but, you know, hypothetically speaking, if it costs $1 million to go to college, then the government would lend against it. So as long as there's an unlimited amount of money being lent to students, then colleges can basically charge whatever they want. And, you know, their cost structure has gone up because they've hired more people, particularly administrators, which has created a lot more overhead and has increased the cost of college.
I love colleges. I love the experience. I was able to provide that for my kids. So I don't mean to disparage the value or the fun of a college education. And I think there are both of those things. But it just breaks my heart to see people in the kind of debt that they won't get out of in 20 years. I mean, that's the beauty of that guaranteed student loan payoff program, where if you make 120 consecutive payments, I mean, they know you're going to be paying on it for 10 years. And then they wipe out the debt if you are in the public sector. But that's just the way people live their lives these days.
Yes, the PSLF. I'm very familiar with that. You know, this is one of the things I'm trying to fix at Jared Dillian Money. You know, my advice about going to school is that if you get into a top-tier school, like a top-10 school, then you should really go no matter what it costs, because the opportunities that are going to be available to you, you'll be able to pay off that student debt. If you go to a second tier school, like a, you know, like a halfway decent private school or a state university, then you can only take out $40,000 in debt and you have to pay it off in 5 years. And if you go to a third tier school, then you should not have any debt at all, because you will not have the earning power to be able to pay that off.
It's an interesting thought. 60 seconds left here, Jared. We'll have to talk about this other topic another day. But as the government continues to roll up massive debts that someday have to be paid off, does the individual investor think about that? Should that be on my radar at all?
Well, it's kind of happening already. I mean, it already is on everybody's radar, but they don't realize the connection. I mean, the connection is that the inflation that we're experiencing is partly as a result of the debt that we are incurring, you know. So that's the relationship. And if people are thinking about investing for the long term, now, you know, we've shifted to a high inflation regime, and people have to factor that in going forward.
You can read more of Jared Dillian's thoughts at jareddillianmoney.com, JAREDDILLIAN, jareddillianmoney.com. Nice to talk to you, Jared, as always. Thanks for your thoughts today.
Thanks, John.
Dr. Amar Patani is our next guest from Main Street Smiles. We frequently in this segment talk about local businesses. Some of them you've heard of, some of them are brand new and you haven't. You've probably heard of Main Street Smiles. We do commercials for them, and when we got dental questions, we defer to the good doctor. I wanted to catch up today and talk a little bit about how doctors and dentists' offices are handling the latest round of COVID. And that won't be the entirety of this, Doc, but I'm just wondering, with Omicron out there, how's business been lately? Welcome to the show.
Hey, John. Good to be here. You know, with Omicron, I think dentists around the country got a good sense of what to improve and measures they had to take with the first round of COVID. You know, I don't know if people remember, but in the beginning, everything shut down. Dentists shut down. We went to seeing emergencies only. Now, things are still business mostly as usual. I know some offices had stopped wearing the more restrictive N95 masks. We've been wearing them the whole time, and we'll continue to do so. We still have our measures in place here, so we're using the aerosol extraction units as well as the UVC light filtration units. And I'm happy to say, you know, in our office here, we have had no cases of staff or doctor COVID incidents here. So we're just going to keep doing what we're doing. And, you know, business has been okay. January is traditionally a slower month for us. January, February starts to pick up again in March. But it's better year over year from last year. We're doing better. So things are good.
You know, we're also cognizant, if not careful, but at least we're aware of the fact that this Omicron is out there, and we understand it's more infectious, so maybe we keep a distance or wear a mask. You kind of don't have that luxury. You can wear a mask, but if you're a dentist, do you worry about that? You have to expose yourself right there to somebody's exhalations.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point, and I think it just goes to show how good some of the precautions dentists are taking are, because we're basically sitting in front of the mouth, and not only that, it's that we're going in there and stirring things up, right? So when we do fillings, when we do extractions, we're in your mouth and we're blasting water, which is creating like a plume of aerosols that comes, you know, right out in front of your face, right out in front of our face. And that's why these mitigation techniques are necessary.
Yeah, if you wanted to get COVID, that would be a good way to do it. But you do have that device. I was pretty amazed. But not only at the cost, but the science of this gadget that you have above the workspace there when you're tending to a patient that pulls the air off. What did you call that again?
So it's the Nederman aerosol extraction unit, and it's fantastic. We've had really good luck with it. It basically sits below your chin, so you can't see it when you're in the dental chair, and it's like a 3-inch pipe that basically sucks everything into it. And so when we're working and we've got aerosols generated in the vicinity of the face, it's constantly running. It's a very quiet, actually, so you really don't notice it. And it's moving the air and sucking in all the aerosols that we're generating. It sends them through a HEPA filter, and then it spits them outside. So we're not even recirculating that air. It's just all jetted outside after it's been filtered and cleaned. And then in addition to that, for anything that happens to escape, we have these UVC air filtration units that are on the ceilings here. And we've got 12 of them in the building, and they're fantastic. They basically suck air in on one side into this closed chamber, and it zaps it with UVC light, and then it spits it out the other side.
I want to ask about clear aligners and implants, but this is just a little selfish of me. I have a little granddaughter who's a year and a month old, and she's got some choppers coming through now. And
yeah.
And boy, can those kids bite. And, and do you have any advice for their parents when you have a small child? How do you clean their teeth? How do you, you know, develop good oral hygiene habits for small children?
Sure. So we recommend seeing your dentist pretty much at the first appearance of teeth. You can start even before then, but around the time they start erupting, the lower, usually it's the lower two front teeth that'll come in first, and that's when we recommend seeing your dentist just to check things out, make sure you've got some good habits in place. Things that are important are wiping down the gums, even with like a wet cloth, you know, something nice and clean, just to get any debris out of the mouth. And then as far as the teeth themselves go, you know, it's kind of gone back and forth a little bit. For a while, we were saying not to use fluoride in the mouth under age 6, but now it's gone back. And fluoride is so important for teeth, especially young growing teeth, that we recommend fluoride from the beginning now. So as soon as you have teeth in the mouth, we want to use a fluoridated toothpaste. And just a little bit, though. We're using a smear of it, the smear or a smear of it, however you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
Right on that brush and just get that in the mouth.
Talk to me about implants. What's new there these days?
Implants, you know, we've been doing a lot of implants. It's really a great option. So a little bit of history here. Implants been around for a while. It's kind of started in the 60s. And 80s and 90s saw a big kind of boom in implants, and it's been kind of going since and growing since. It's pretty common nowadays to see implants. What they are, implants are, they're essentially, if you can picture a wall anchor. So if you have a piece of drywall and you're trying to hang a picture and you don't have a stud, you're going to put a little plastic anchor in there. Well, an implant is like that anchor, except that it's going to go in your bone, And instead of being made out of plastic, it's made out of titanium. Sometimes zirconia, but usually titanium. And titanium is an interesting material because it's biocompatible. So it's one of the few materials we have that we can put in the bone, and the bone actually grows into it and becomes part of it through a process called osseointegration. And that makes it essentially one piece. And once it's totally healed, we then put a crown or a tooth on top of that. And it's as close as we can get to your real teeth. It's much better than what we used to do with bridges or dentures. The benefit of implants are that they're fixed, so you're not taking them in and out, and bridges are fixed also. They're also not dependent on the adjacent teeth. So whereas bridges, you know, you've got a tooth on each side that you're very dependent on. You lose one of those teeth, you lose your bridge. An implant is solo, it's independent, it's occupying that space itself. So if you lose an adjacent tooth, you can consider another implant, but you're not going to lose your implant. The implants are very cleansable, and you can floss around them. So whereas with bridges, you had to get that threader and floss underneath, with an implant, you can actually floss it just like a regular tooth. It feels like a regular tooth. It looks like a regular tooth. And there's one more big benefit of implants is they preserve bone. Our bodies are very efficient, and they essentially get rid of any wastage, right? So if we have bone sitting around and no tooth in it, the body will take that bone away. It'll say, hey, this bone is sitting here. It's not supporting a tooth. I'm going to take it away. When we put an implant in the bone, the body now has reason to keep that bone around. And so we're preserving that bone in your mouth as well.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it that way. Why would I? I'm not a dentist. You are. Dr. Amar Patani from Main Street Smiles in Barrington. And if you listen to this radio station a little bit, you might know that their website is mainstreet312.com. I'm really glad to hear about those health and safety protocols that you guys honor over there. And I'll call you another day, Doctor. It's nice to visit with you on the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Great. Thanks, John. Take care.
1243 on WGN. We've got more business news. This is Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The suburban office vacancy rate rose to a record high for the fourth consecutive quarter. Real estate services firm Jones Lang LaSalle says the amount of empty suburban office space rose to 26.9% at the end of December. Cranes reports that's higher than the 26.5% vacancy rate at the end of September and marked the fourth consecutive quarter the vacancy rate increased to an all-time high. The suburbs have seen a net loss of 2.8 million square feet of office tenants since 2019. A mystery bidder that's been seeking to acquire Chicago publishing company R.R. Donnelly & Sons has raised its offer again. Bloomberg reports the unidentified bidder made another non-binding offer of $11.50 a share in cash. The previous offer was $11 a share. The new bid could impact R.R. Donnelly's agreement to be bought by Chatham Asset Management for $10.85 a share. For now, the company's board continues to recommend the Chatham deal. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Steve's got the business of food, Mr. There Alexander.
Mm-hmm. As you know, John, some of our listeners have been chiming in this week about the various problems caused by squirrels. They may have trouble with this one. Today is National Squirrel Appreciation Day. If you're of a certain age, you may have appreciated this one.
Rocky and Bullwinkle, starring that supersonic speedster, Rocket J. Squirrel.
And on this Squirrel Appreciation Day, here is someone who really appreciates them.
This is Steve Sullivan. I am the director of the Hefner Museum of Natural History at Miami University in Oxford, Ohio.
For many years, Steve was here in Chicago at the Peggy Notobart Nature Museum.
One of the best places in the city to go see and learn about squirrels.
So, with all of the negative comments about squirrels we've heard recently on WGN Radio, why should we appreciate squirrels?
Maybe the number one reason that I think they're a special animal is because we don't see wild animals up close very often, but squirrels are one of those few wild mammals that we can create relationships with. We can see them in our backyard. We can see them in the forest preserves.
Oh, yeah, but squirrels steal food from our bird feeders. They chew wiring in our cars and houses.
Well, sure. You know, I've heard all the pejorative names for them, tree rats and everything else. And, you know, fair enough. But that's one of the great things about studying them using the citizen science model, where everybody who can hear me can log into Project Squirrel on SciStarter.com and tell me about the squirrels that they see. There are all sorts of dynamic ecological interactions going on in our neighborhoods that squirrels help us understand.
That website is scistarter.org and then search for squirrels. But there is another way to appreciate squirrels. Yeah, this is the business of food.
Even my kids enjoy eating squirrel.
What's it taste like?
A relatively rich kind of succulent flavor. You might compare it to a farm-raised pork.
Chicken of the trees, I've heard them called, and we are in the middle of squirrel hunting season in Illinois, which is needed to keep the population down.
You know, we could become literally neck-deep in squirrels pretty quickly. I would encourage you to get a hunting license and go out and try your hand at cooking up a few squirrels.
Thank you to Steve Sullivan. From the farm to your belly, it's National Granola Day, and tomorrow, treat yourself to a blonde brownie. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
C.D. Young joins us now, owner and CEO of Spirit Elephant Restaurant. There was an interesting line about your stuff. Welcome to the show, C.D. You're on the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. How are you?
I'm good, John. Thank you so much for having us.
It says here, remember when you thought vegetables were boring? You guys are a vegan restaurant, is that right?
We are indeed. We like to say we make craveable and amazing food that just so happens to be plant-based. You wouldn't notice.
Is the idea, though, it's interesting you say that, because I think if you embrace vegetables, you don't have to try and churn them into meat. But that's the craze these days. That's the trend, if you will. Do you do that, or are you just serving vegetables as they are?
We do a little of everything. So we consider some of those. We have an amazing meatloaf bourguignon, for example, which we call sort of a gateway food. People who don't want to eat just vegetables for dinner can come and have that bourguignon, and they can feel like they get the meat they've been used to and then a lot of vegetables to go along with it. Or you have the people who like to be more traditional plant-based and get a plant-forward meal, and we do that as well and everything in between.
Hungry Hound last year said you'll never miss the meat if you go there. So what's on the menu? What do you really like? What do people like?
You know, what's interesting is we change our menus seasonally, and so we get a really good snapshot of what people like the most or the least. This fall-winter menu has been super interesting because people like everything fairly equally. So we have some of our main courses. We divide them up by something we call prime cuts, which are sort of like a meat-focused idea. So we have crab cakes. We have the meatloaf. And then we have bowls that seem to have more vegetables, and we have something called an arroz trofa, which is a Peruvian rice dish. And we even have an orange chicken, which, you know, emulates that Chinese American dish Americans love so much. And all of these things, and the burger, we also have the burger, which is a prime cut, which has always been a favorite. That hasn't left the menu yet. But all of these things are selling kind of equally. So I feel like people are liking them all fairly constantly and almost the same.
Elephant in Vine, fast casual vegan restaurant, inspired by Winnetka's Spirit Elephant, is opening in Lincoln Park, Evanston, too, right?
Correct.
So talk a little bit about that.
So we are lucky. We've had a lot of success, and we get a lot of positive feedback, and a lot of people travel from far to come in to eat with us at Spirit Elephant, and we're always hearing, please open one by us. So we decided to pivot a little bit, and we're going to try a fast casual concept of Spirit Elephant, which is called Elephant and Vine, and it's also going to have the delicious, craveable food that just happens to be plant-based, but it's going to be a quick service format, and we are starting out near two universities, Northwestern and DePaul. Young people love us, so we feel like it's a great place to start some fast growth.
Yeah, you kind of are in front of the trend, aren't you? I mean, it does seem like people sure are clamoring for this kind of food, aren't they?
I think so. People with online now, people understand that eating a plant-based meal is kind of your do-good for the day. I mean, it has the trifecta of being good for your health, good for the environment, and, of course, good for animals. So you can go have a wonderful experience and leave feeling good.
Is a typical table, though, say of three people who are totally into it, or two people that are totally into it, and two people are like, all right, it's your turn, we're going to this place. And so you have to, or they have to sort of convert them.
Well, it's been sort of a transformation. I think initially we had a lot of the vegans come out and try us. The word has spread, and some of the most fun instances are when people who are plant-based bring somebody who's a hardcore omnivore, carnivore type, and that person likes it so much, they'll come back and bring their friends. And I love, the things I love most recently is, you know, a guy's guy came in and tried out and said, hey, I'm going to have my, you know, the next time we have a guy's night out, we're going to come here. So that kind of thing makes us feel really good.
Yeah, that's not the kid. Well, that's exactly what I was wondering. That is not a typical guy's night out. And yet, vegetable bourguignon, that sounds really, is that what you called it? The bourguignon recipe?
No, it's meatloaf bourguignon.
Meatloaf bourguignon, but it's it's not made out of meat. That is very appealing to me. That just sometimes the title of a food makes you go, okay, I think I'll try that. That sounds very appealing. That sounds like a good choice, C.D.
Well, John, come, let's have dinner.
C.D. Young is the owner and CEO, Spirit Elephant Restaurant, spiritelephantrestaurant.com. Now coming to a university near you, both DePaul and Northwestern. Good idea. And continued success. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful weekend.